Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to once again talk about living a longer and healthier life. And it begins by paying attention to what we consume. Even in small quantities, a toxic is still toxic. This whole notion, well, everything in moderation. That's what my doctor told me when I was growing up. So he smoked and he drank. Everyone else smoked and drank. Everyone I knew. And as a result, none of them lived longer lives. In fact, in my family, of all my aunts and uncles, there was only one that reached 75. Most died in their 60s. And yet they considered that a long life. It wasn't. Now we can look back and see that much of what we were doing that people thought was normal, like having meat 3 times a day, dairy 3 times a day, because you were supposed to care for your family. They were trusting the dietitians and the home economics teachers. And as a result, they weren't aware that behind the scenes, the dairy industry, the meat industry, the cattlemen, the egg association, all these different specialty groups were emphasizing what a person should consume. And everyone believed authority figures. So as a result, obesity was common. But diseases from smoking and drinking, liver diseases, kidney disease, lung diseases, and heart disease were really bad. Now, we didn't see anyone with Alzheimer's when I was growing up because nobody lived long enough to have Alzheimer's. And if they did live a long life, they generally were living a pretty healthy life. A new study today from the University of Southern California, published in the peer-reviewed journal Biochemical and Biophysical Research Communication, shows that green tea consumption may heal neurodegenerative conditions like Alzheimer's. That's correct. Now, mind you, this is just one piece of a very complex puzzle, but it's an important piece. Inside the green tea, there are chemicals called catechins, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-N-S, and they're able to assist the brain in healing. I would say between 250 to 1,000 milligrams a day of decaffeinated green tea. And it's potentially even assisting in the prevention and treatment of neurodegenerative conditions like Alzheimer's and Huntington's and Parkinson's diseases. Now, I've worked with patients with all of those conditions, many, and I've seen that when giving as a part of a larger protocol to give green tea 3 or 4 times a day, it's made a difference. Specifically, the study sought to investigate how catechins from green tea may work to increase brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, or the activity of a nerve growth factor that is essential for the growth and maintenance and survival of neurons. It's believed catechins are able to increase the BDNF, and as such are a method worth researching. That's what they found. So take your green tea, have a healthier brain longer. We all know that a Mediterranean diet is healthy. It's not a perfect diet. It still allows people to have meat, but they don't have as much, and dairy and fish. But it's generally fish out of the Mediterranean, which is healthier than most of the fish that we consume, which are grown in fish farms, like almost all of your tilapia, your salmon, unless it's wild salmon, and shrimp in particular, grown in these very toxic mediums. That's one of the reasons that they are easily found in a lot of restaurants, mainly as appetizers. Oh, have all the shrimp you want. Well, first of all, how it's cooked is generally deep fried in a trans fat oil. That's bad. It has a batter on it that could be having MSG, or at the very least, lots of salt and white flour. That's bad. And then it has been frequently found coming from China or Taiwan or other countries where they have these huge fish farms and grow millions of these things, and it's extremely toxic. One more reason why you should never have shrimp or scallops or these other types of things that come from this. In any case, so we know that it's good because, meaning the Mediterranean diet is good because it gives you lots of beans, lots of fruits and vegetables, herbs, a lot of bitters that they use in seasoning, lots of tomatoes, generally done with good cooking practices, slow cooking to release the elements. And of course, one of the most important things is the oil, olive oil, extra virgin olive oil. The average person living in the Mediterranean knows the difference between a highly processed refined oil, it's generally very clear, and a deep green, little pungent oil, and that's the first press, the organic oil. And that's what they consume. Now, for those of you like myself who've been to Italy many times and you like to eat in different venues, in fact, I couldn't find a bad restaurant in Italy. Couldn't find a bad restaurant in Paris either. I don't think they have one. You'll get a plate, and on the plate, you'll have olives. Now, it depends upon the restaurant, but in one restaurant I ate, there were 10 different types of olives on a plate, and then there was antipasto in another one, where you would get grilled eggplant, tomato, onion, garlic, and zucchini, and then there was a bowl of olive oil. You'd kind of dip it in the olive oil. We don't do that in the United States. We tend not to like to fuss in the kitchen. Many people don't fuss in the kitchen. Some do. And those that do generally have much higher diet, much more conscious of living foods. And then you have, but still the Mediterranean diet helps prevent a lot of disease because of the quality of the food that's locally grown, it's frequently organic, and they tend not to overeat it. They tend to have one main meal in the middle of the day, a small meal later, and a very small meal in the morning. We tend to be very confused about our eating habits, generally three meals a day, and if you're eating three meals a day, more often than not, you're going to be overweight, because those are not going to be healthy meals. But then along comes the green Mediterranean diet. And that could be far healthier. It's also healthier for the planet. According to this latest study, people who eat a traditional Mediterranean diet have lower rates of heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. But new research suggests that a green Mediterranean diet, which avoids all meat and provides extra greens, like 7 or 8 servings of greens a day, is even better for your health. So, the diet has not caught on yet, because it takes a long time for people to change eating habits they've had their whole life. But if it does come along, and I believe in time it will, then people will start to eat more of these. And also in the United States, people are beginning to grow more of these. It's not uncommon for people now to have their own backyard garden or hydroponic garden. And that is the future. So, well, there's one step beyond that, and that is freeze-drying it. Getting stuff in bulk, freeze-drying it, which takes about more or less 33 to 36 hours, and then it's fresh for the next 30 years. So we're going to have some substantial food shortages, not just because of what's happening in Ukraine, one of the wheat baskets of the world, Russia's the largest, but also even in the United States, because of all the different weather patterns, seeds are washed out and rot, or it gets too hot and it's too arid, there's not enough water, and they shrivel. I'm sure many of you noticed last year, for example, where you should have been getting large ears of corn on the cob, they were small, very small. And I remember seeing in a health food store the peaches and the nectarines, very small and not sweet. There was not enough moisture in the tree for them to grow to full size and sweeten naturally. A new study from Ben Gurion University in Israel and Harvard University, the research trust source, notes that global production of animal-based foods, including livestock feed, accounts for 57% of total greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture, whereas production of plant-based foods accounts for only 29%. Another study estimates that if everyone became vegan, this would reduce the amount of land worldwide that farmers need to grow food by 3.1 billion hectares, or about 76% of the land we could then preserve. A series of clinical trials now suggest that eating a eco-green Mediterranean diet, or what is known as the Green Med diet that I just mentioned, could also help the benefit of all of that pollution that goes into the atmosphere. Also, animals secrete methane, which is far more, let's say, dangerous, producing global warming, than carbon dioxide. So it's a healthier diet, providing us more fiber and polyphenols and high-quality amino acids from the plants. Beans are complete amino acids, complete proteins, legumes, pulses, nuts and seeds. So that's what we should emphasize. And yet it's not being emphasized, but it should be. Also, the use of antibiotics by women in middle life is linked to later cognitive decline. A brand new study from Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School. A team of researchers has found a link between the use of antibiotics by women in their middle age and quickly losing their cognition later in life. Prior research has suggested there is a connection between gut microbiome health and mental health, communications between the gut and the central nervous system, and it's been labeled the gut-brain axis. And some studies have shown an apparent link between problems in the gut and mental diseases, such as depression and schizophrenia. Prior research has also shown that antibiotics can lead to serious disruptions in the microbiome. Let me just explain this in simple lay language. Though there was a study of 15,000 female nurses describing antibiotic use and the results of cognitive scores collected several years later. But when you take in a healthy product, let's say you eat a coconut yogurt, vegan yogurt, or you have sauerkraut, or you have tempeh or miso, any one of hundreds of fermented foods, apple cider vinegar, you are recolonizing with pre or probiotics the good bacteria in your gut. And the more you eat of good bacteria, the healthier immune system. But it's not just the immune system in the gut. It's just not the microbiome. It's the immune system over your whole body. So here's what you understand. When you take in antibiotics, the antibiotics destroy bacteria. As a result, you're wiping out hundreds of billions, if not trillions, of bacteria that were used to keep you healthy, keep your immune system strong, to keep the immune system not just in the gut, but the entire body strong, and the communication between the bacteria, because bacteria communicate. Instead, you then allow a medium for toxic bacteria, the bad bacteria, to collect. Now, if you're eating a poor diet, like a meat-based diet, a sugar-based diet, refined carbohydrates-based diet, that's bad bacteria to begin with. So now all you're going to get is bad bacteria, and hence a poor immune system and poor health. From University Hospital of Zurich, which is in Switzerland, more than a gut feeling, bilberries, B-I-L-B-E-R-R-I-E-S, are good for gastrointestinal overall health. According to experiments based out of the University Hospital of Zurich, Switzerland, eating bilberries can lessen the effects of these diseases by reducing inflammation and providing overall gastrointestinal relief. So that is important. So if you want healthier body, eat bilberries. Now you can get dried bilberries, so they're not that difficult to get. Just include some into your health, all right? Dried bilberries also improve chronic colitis. That was also shown in some of these other irritable bowel syndrome suffering. That's the latest on health and healing. And remember, you can always go to GaryNall.com. And we're adding a lot of new sections. And we're reorganizing the articles to make them easier for you to find and locate the article you want. But we have an awful lot of good stuff there. And we're adding a lot of videos. Now, these are videos you have not seen before. For example, we've already added about 160 videos on shopping and cooking and food preparation and guilt-free desserts I think you'll find it really upbeat and positive and can add some excitement, new recipes to your overall health regime. So go to GaryNall.com for that. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're broadcasting all over the world. We're having a few technical glitches right now. Our team of engineers in New York, led by Rodney, is on it. The programs that are broadcasting today live, like this one, will not be affected. You'll be able to hear them. Those that have been pre-recorded, the computer that processes that is having difficulty, and we're trying to get it fixed by 3 o'clock today. If for some reason you tune in a program later and it's not a broadcasting, it's dead air, go to the archives and we'll put those pre-records on the archives so you can still download them. And if you want to listen to the archives, here's the number, 631-359-9463, 631-359-9463. These happen on rare occasion, but we're there to try to sort it out and make it work. Got a good team working on it right now, and they're working with outside people as well. It's just a computer error, and we don't know why. And that's why it was breaking and interrupting and restarting what I just said over again during my introduction before we go from health and nutrition to other topics. Now, today I want to play specifically the backstory, what you're not being reported on by any of the other media, including the mainstream media and some of the alternative media. Why? There is a whole group of videos now that have gone viral. I simply put one up. I put the one that I considered least upsetting to watch. And do not watch them if you're easily upset. It's of a group of Russian soldiers bound and tied in vans, being taken off the van by the Ukrainian neo-Nazis and just simply summarily shot, killed. Now, if you look over, you'll see already a whole bunch of them with bags over their heads, bound, and they're dead. And nowhere are the atrocities on either side, which are bad and should never be condoned. But the media is whitewashing all this, and it shouldn't. The terrors, the horrors, the carnage of war is always something that we should try to avoid. But more importantly, we should know the truth of how we got here. For example, is it possible that we could have prevented this entire war? The answer is yes. Who was responsible? Did the United States or any of its agencies or agents have anything to do with it? Absolutely, and you're going to hear about Victoria Nuland, the second in command of this whole issue over the State Department. She's been advocating this for a long period of time. We actually have voicemails of her and the ambassador to Ukraine talking about who they are putting in power after spending $5 billion. And Ukraine is a completely corrupt country, has been, but what is its history? Now, that does not mean that Ukrainian people are corrupt. They're decent people, highly educated. They deserve peace. So we've got to be careful about what we do with regime changes around the world. Did anyone from the American media go into any city, Tripoli or any other city in North Africa, and ask the people there, what was it like afterwards? What was it like during NATO's bombing of your country in Libya? Not a word. We took the number one, most beautiful, prosperous, long-lived freedom people, and we destroyed it. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and all the people involved in that security state, they all had to participate. The same is happening now in Yemen. Think of all the children today who are going to starve to death. And not a word, who suffer from cholera and could be saved by medications. The United States and this administration is blocking those supplies from getting to them. And our allies, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, are terrorist states. And yet, not a word in the media. Does a child in one country matter more than a child in another country if both children are facing death and disease. In my opinion, all children have value. They're all sentient beings, yet you wouldn't know that by administrations, governmental agencies, or the media. So we're going to play you an interview by someone who lives in Ukraine, runs a very high probability of being killed for his reporting. But also, we're going to be hearing from the battle for Ukraine with an ex-UN inspector, Scott Ritter. He's on the gray zone with Max Blumenthal and his partner. So you're not going to hear any of this anywhere else. It's important you know this. Again, the war is wrong. Putin is wrong. But so too are the United States Asians that caused this to happen. We're going to go first to telling you the background on Victoria Nuland and her husband. This will be a five-part series. This is part one.
Enter Russia and exploit it to a degree that is unprecedented. Exploit it, steal from it. I mean, really just, it's not too strong a word to say that that Russia as a country was raped by American bureaucrats and American financiers and just the whole neoliberal ideology that was imported wholesale into Russia, which eviscerated the country, created these obscenely rich oligarchs, even as the people were starving, even as the retirees and veterans of the Second World War were destitute in the streets. The Americans created the horrible 90s for the Russians. And it is with some amazement that we can see how far Russia has come from those dark days of the 90s. But that's the Russia that the American establishment wants to see again. That's the Russia that people like Victoria Nuland and the class of people that she represents in the American bureaucratic establishment want to see imposed on Russia again. They want a Russia that is prostrate. They want a Russia that is broken. They want a Russia that they can exploit like vultures. That is their goal, and they state it. They don't have any problem stating it, because their goal is to break Russia and then turn their full attention to China and break China. And the thing is, in their arrogance, they do not realize the weakness of the United States. They do not realize that the United States has become a hollow empire. Its people are dispirited and broken, or else they are degenerate and decadent. They do not realize that the United States has no industrial base, that these people themselves created the conditions for the destruction of the industrial base in the United States, okay? People like Victoria Nuland's husband, who I'll get to in just a moment, okay? But what's important is to understand their goals. The goal of Victoria Nuland and her class of leaders is to break Russia by any means necessary and at any cost that is necessary, so as to later focus on China and do exactly the same thing to China, break China. Because they have come to the conclusion that they can never allow a peer nation to rise again. A peer nation, P-E-E-R, in the sense that a nation that can match the United States militarily or economically. At this time, China matches the United States economically. And one can argue that in certain regards, Russia not only matches the United States militarily, but outpaces it in certain technologies that will prove to be crucial, probably. And so at this time, the American bureaucratic establishment, because all these people are bureaucrats, they're locked into their positions and they don't need to go to the people to ask permission to have their jobs. Well, these people, they mean to break Russia, break China, and never again allow a peer nation to rise. And that is why we are about to experience a global war. In fact, I would argue that we are already in this global war. This is a hybrid war fought on multiple fronts: economic, military, political, informational. And I realize that in my own case, I am one of the people involved in this information war. And so I've tried to make it to decide. I mean, I have tried, and I'm trying to be Switzerland insofar as this is concerned, to call him like I see him. Okay. And right now, my focus is on the United States and Western Europe. And so here you have me giving you this discussion of Victoria Nuland, whom you will see is a key player. Now, Ukraine, since 1991, the collapse of the Soviet Union, has been a cesspool of Western corruption. It's very important that you understand this. It's Western corruption. Because you see, when the Soviet Union collapsed, there was a power vacuum. And into this power vacuum, very ambitious people, rapacious people, came and stole the goods of the state of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was broken up into several republics, the Russian Federation, Belarus, Ukraine, and so forth, Kazakhstan, and the rest. And what happened was that in these different countries, oligarchs were not only allowed to rise, but were in fact encouraged to rise by the Western powers, in particular the United States, because the United States figured that by way of these oligarchs, these countries could be controlled. And so they outsourced tyranny to oligarchs, and they created a kleptocracy in each of these nations by prioritizing and giving attention, diplomatic attention, political attention, and even economic attention to these various oligarchs. And so, in the starting line of 1991, Ukraine and Russia were in the same position. Ukraine became a cesspool of corruption because it was in the interest of the Westerners to maintain a corrupt Ukraine, to maintain a corrupt Russia. If Russia was corrupt, if Ukraine was corrupt, it would be easy for Western interests to go into these countries, Ukraine and Russia, and steal. Steal by way of crooked deals, no-show jobs, and all the rest of it, all the things that we understand. Take the assets of the state and strip them. And take away all the riches that these countries have. Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Belarus, they are all incredibly rich insofar as natural resources, but they are also incredibly rich in terms of human resources. And yet, these oligarchs from the West, these financiers, these horrifying people, these bureaucrats from the State Department that assisted them, they cared nothing for the people of the former Soviet Union. They cared only about stripping the assets and the money from the broken Soviet Union. And so Ukraine and Russia started at the same spot. Okay?
Okay, that's just part one. He's just getting into it. But then he goes through meticulous detail of actual government documents, Freedom of Information Act request, showing you how the United States State Department, under the administration with the security states, like the CIA, spent $5 billion in undermining Ukraine's democracy, having a coup in 2014 that removed the democratically elected president and installed the people that you're now seeing, and with the full knowledge and acceptance of the neo-Nazis. There are at least 40 different videos, including from the BBC and from Time and from Vice, that I have watched, that are on YouTube showing you the neo-Nazis. They're just like Nazis, and they act like, and they killed 14 million, 14,000 Russians in the Donbass area. Not nothing, no condemnation, nothing. The person you're hearing is Gonzalo Lira, Lira. He's a Chilean American expat. He is living currently in Kharkov, Ukraine, one of Ukraine's largest cities after Kiev, that's completely surrounded by Russian forces. He graduated from Dartmouth College in history. He is an award-winning filmmaker, documentarian, and so we're hearing from him, and what he's saying is going to get him killed. He keeps moving from place to place. But with the intelligence agencies that Ukrainian government has at its behest, he's probably going to be limited. But anyhow, that's who you're going to be hearing on an ongoing basis this week. What we're going to do now is we're going to go to a longer conversation. It's a four-part conversation. It's about 20 minutes long, and this is looking at the other side that no one in the media will touch of the battle for Ukraine with ex-UN weapons inspector Scott Ritter on the gray zone. Let's go to that now.
Mixed reporting, but generally one side of the narrative, which is echoing kind of the Ukrainian government side in US media, which is that this plucky underdog David fighting the Russian Goliath in Ukraine is holding off the Russian advance around Kiev and is doing serious damage to the Russian military machine in the east. That seems to be different from what I'm seeing on Telegram, including Russian language channels on Telegram, as well as alternative media, and what seems to be fairly obvious. But what's your read of what's happening right now? Is Russia winning, or has its strategy completely collapsed?
Well, let me start off with the caveat that, unlike apparently the former generals who provide expert opinion on CNN, MSNBC, and Fox, I don't have access to the Russian plan. I mean, I keep hearing that this invasion, this incursion hasn't gone according to plan. I have yet to see the plan. I'm operating at a disadvantage there. I can't compare what's happening with the plan that everybody speaks of. I also don't have access to the Russian playbook, because apparently every day I'm told that this is straight out of the Russian playbook. I don't have the Russian plan. I've studied the Russian military for 35 years. I spent a lot of time training to close with and destroy the Soviet military in combat. I think I know a lot about them, but I don't have their playbook. So I'm at a disadvantage again on that. What I can say is I come from the school of interaction with the Russians that uses the concept of trust but verify, meaning that I'm going to listen to what the Russians are saying, and I'm going to go with that until it's been shown to be otherwise. The Russians have said going in that they are not seeking to occupy Ukraine. And this is a huge fact that we need to focus on when we talk about the Russian operation. They are not there to occupy Ukraine. And you know, the configuration of forces sustains this. Normal military math has attackers seeking a 3-to-1 advantage over defenders. So for every Ukrainian out there, you'd like to have 3 Russians lined up against them. Ukrainians, the Russians brought together around 200,000 men spread out over a wide area surrounding Ukraine. The Ukrainians had a standing army of 260,000, highly trained, well-equipped, well-led professional soldiers. And they were backed up by over 330,000 reservists and security forces, police forces, interior troops, et cetera. So Russia's going into this with a 1-to-3 disadvantage. That is, for every single Russian soldier out there, there's 3 Ukrainian defenders. Now, under normal circumstances, this would be suicide. But you have to listen to what the Russians said. The Russians are not engaged in a battle of territorial acquisition. Normally, when you seek to occupy somebody, you seek to seize territory, hold territory. The territory becomes important. Russia has 2 stated military objectives, the first of which is denazification. That is to destroy the military units that are aligned with neo-Nazi, ultra-nationalist political forces in Ukraine, units like the Azov Battalion, units like the Don Battalion, and others of that ilk. The Russians are seeking them out and destroying them on the field of battle as we speak. The second is demilitarization. That is, Russia has recognized that the Ukrainian military is a de facto proxy of NATO. It has been trained for the past 7 years by U.S. forces, NATO forces at training facilities in Ukraine, training facilities out of Ukraine, to be interoperable with NATO, meaning that you can take a NATO-trained battalion of Ukrainian soldiers, unplug them from Ukraine, plug them into a NATO exercise in Germany, and they'll function seamlessly. They have the same command and control, the same training, the same tactics, etc. Russia views this as a proxy of NATO and has said this must be dismantled. Russia gave the Ukrainian military the opportunity to do this peacefully. Stay in your barracks. We're going to come in and we're going to get rid of all that NATO provided junk that you were given. It's actually pretty good equipment. But I mean, that, you know, that's the process of demilitarization. Or you can seek to meet us on the field of battle and we'll do it old school. And unfortunately for both sides, the Ukrainians have chosen old school. Now, what does old school mean? Let's come back to what I said at the beginning. This isn't the Iraqi military. This isn't a military that stood up to the United States in 1991 and got destroyed on the field of battle, annihilated, and then spent the next decade plus unable to reconstitute itself because of economic sanctions, and therefore went up against the world's finest combined arms fighting force in 2003 with nothing, and still put up a pretty good fight, by the way. But my point is, the Ukrainian military is the exact opposite. These are highly trained, highly educated people who have been put through the ropes by their NATO trainers. You know, there's an interesting slide that the Department of Defense put out there. It shows the NATO training facility in Western Ukraine that was bombed the other day. And it says, we train up to 5 Ukrainian battalions a year to NATO standards. And then they have a yellow arrow that goes over here and shows the Donbass so that they can fight the Russians over here. That's 40 battalions trained by NATO for the sole purpose of killing Russians in Donbass.
This is the base that's referred to kind of as the International Peacekeeping Center that was close to Correct. The Polish border, where possibly 100 foreign fighters from the so-called Foreign Legion were killed that you're referring to. But what Russia has maintained and what was pretty apparent was that this was a de facto NATO base inside Ukraine, which is technically not a member of NATO. So you're talking about de facto NATOization being the main factor in this war.
Absolutely. It's the ultimate objective. I mean, Russia, this war was predicated by NATO's appetite for Eastern expansion, the expansion eastward to include Ukraine. Russia has long said this is a red line. William Burns, the former U.S. ambassador, wrote a memo after the 2008 Bucharest conference that formally invited Ukraine and Georgia that said, "Niet means niet, no means no." And he accurately outlined the Russian objectives. He said these objectives actually are solid, meaning they're not fanciful. We have to take this seriously. And he said, and this was written, I believe, in February of 2009. He said, if we fail to respect the Russian position, they will eventually be compelled to take military action that will destroy Ukraine, and Ukraine will lose Crimea and the Donbas as a result. Now, this is before 2014, before the annexation of Crimea became reality, before Russian separatists decided to peel away Donbass. In 2009, it was recognized that Ukraine has a Russian Achilles heel, the Donbass and Crimea, that it's going to lose if it tries to join NATO, and in the process, it will be destroyed. A U.S. ambassador, who is today, by the way, a well-respected director of the CIA. So this isn't some has-been. This isn't Michael McFaul or somebody of this nature. This is a guy who still has cards in the game, chips he's playing with, real chips. Said we have to take this seriously, and we didn't. We expanded. No means no, and we're finding out what the Russian definition of no is today. And no is we're going to go in and we're going to denazify, demilitarize Ukraine for the purpose of achieving Ukrainian neutrality. Which is the political objective, the ultimate political objective. Russia is winning this fight. People say,
I just wanted to share something before I toss to Aaron, based on your comments about the International Peacekeeping Center, which is obviously a ridiculous name for the base, but this is a this is the International Peacekeeping and Security Center in Ukraine. Before Russia struck it, our colleague Alex Rubenstein tweeted this. Here's a Ukrainian soldier training with 2 American soldiers at the base, because it is effectively a NATO base, and they're both Black American soldiers. And the trainee geotagged himself Zimbabwe to mock the race of the Black soldiers, and then he posted 1488, referring to the 14 words of the dead neo-Nazi, American neo-Nazi, David Lane, in 88, which stands for Heil Hitler. So this is kind of what's going on at the base, since you also mentioned denazification. Go ahead, Aaron.
Well, I have a clip I want to play of Zelensky talking about what you just talked about, Scott, and get your response to it. This is Zelensky on Sunday speaking to Fareed Zakaria, and he kind of gave away the game when it comes to the role of NATO expansion here. Listen to what he said.
Requested them personally to say directly that we are going to accept you into NATO or NATO in a year or two or five. Just say it directly and clearly, or just say no. And the response was very clear. You're not going to be a NATO or EU member, but publicly the doors will remain open. Requested them personally to take.
So just to repeat that, that's Zelensky saying that I asked NATO, presumably he means the US, for a direct answer on whether or not Ukraine will be admitted. And what he was told is that you will never join NATO, but publicly the doors will remain open. I'm wondering, Scott, your reaction to that.
Well, you know, this isn't the first time that this has happened. One goes back to 2008 and the decision by Mikhail Saakashvili, the president of Georgia, to launch a military incursion into South Ossetia, which from a Georgian perspective is a Georgian republic, and to return this territory to Georgian sovereign control. He had been in negotiations with the United States about this, Susan Rice, who at the time I believe was either the National Security Advisor or the Secretary of State, Condi Rice. And from his perspective, he was told that the US is going to be there for him, that NATO will be there. And he went in and found out the hard way that nope, they aren't there for you. And his military got smashed around a little bit. And you know, it cost him a lot. He later humiliated Ms. Rice in person when she came to visit, where he called her out. There's a videotape where he said, "You told me you'd be there. We went in because you told me you'd be there and you abandoned us." And she was embarrassed by this. But the point is, why would Saakashvili believe this when there's no doubt in my mind that the U.S. said, you know, we're not going to be there for you? Well, the reason why he believed that is because prior to this, the United States military was in Georgia training the Georgian military to U.S. and NATO standards. The Georgians were deploying forces into Iraq. In fact, when that war happened, they had an entire brigade of U.S. trained forces, their best forces in Iraq, that they had to bring back to try and defend Tbilisi if the Russians went on. They went into Afghanistan. Georgians have bled, died in both conflicts. And the Georgians believe that, yeah, we paid a blood price. And therefore, our fellow warriors who we train with are never going to abandon us. And you know, that's not an unfounded thought. When you train this close, this intense with American service members, you get good ties with them. But these guys don't understand that the American service members have no say when it comes to policy, that they might be well-meaning when they talk about how there's a military brotherhood. They don't get to decide whether or not they go in and defend you. And there's no doubt in my mind that Zelensky was operating under the same thing, where his military guys were saying, "Man, we are so tight with the Americans. We train like this. We're brothers. And, you know, they're not going to abandon us. Our brothers would never abandon us. They've told me we will be there for you." Zelensky went, "All right, let's push this thing. Let's let the Russians come in. Let's sucker them in. And then everybody will come to our assistance, because that's what brothers do." Well, no, the military doesn't get to make the call. The politicians do. And Zelensky has learned the Saakashvili, law, rule. Never trust the Americans, because the Americans will never be there for you. Something that Ashraf Ghani learned in Afghanistan as well.
Well, what is the U.S. NATO politician's motive in saying to Zelensky, "You're never going to get in, but publicly we're going to leave the door open. Thereby, we're never going to agree to the key Russian demand that could have prevented this war."
You just hit it on the head. We are not going to be seen as giving in to Russia. And now you ask yourself, well, isn't that sort of stupid to talk about, you know, tension in perpetuity? I think in 2019, RAND Corporation published a study that listed, I think, seven destabilizing factors. Now, before I go into this, understand that RAND just doesn't gin up studies on its own. That's not how think tank business works. The think tank business works because somebody in the Department of Defense or the Department of State said, we want you to write a study about a very pressing policy problem. How do we destabilize Russia? How do we? And so they wrote it and said, these are the top things. The number one thing, Ukraine. Number one, overextending, unbalancing Russia. There it is. And the number one thing on the list was Ukraine. Ukraine is the trap, so to speak. There's so many Americans today that think they can recreate Afghanistan in Ukraine to suck Russia into a conflict in Ukraine that will destroy Russia the way Afghanistan destroyed the Soviet Union. Because at the end of the day, we need to understand that the policy of the United States towards Russia has been, since Michael McFaul became Obama's Russia expert on the National Security Council, regime change. When I say regime change, I mean get rid of Vladimir Putin. If you go back and take a look at the reset policy, remember that embarrassing red button that they pushed that was spelled wrong, meant something totally different? That was about empowering Dmitry Medvedev, who had taken over as president from Putin. Putin had been relegated to prime minister because of constitutional issues. These idiots actually thought that Medvedev was a real president. And they thought that if they went in there and suddenly opened up the floodgates in terms of supporting Russia, doing what Russia wants, working with Russia, being a partner with Russia, that the Russian people would say, Dmitry Medvedev, who nobody knows anything about, by the way, just sort of thrown in here to be president. And everybody understood what the deal was. There's not a single Russian alive who didn't know what the deal was. But the Americans apparently didn't know what the deal was. And we were trying to empower Medvedev to stab Putin in the back. And we saw how that worked. When the time came, Medvedev saluted smartly, took three steps backwards, and Putin resumed his position as president of Russia. But Putin knew, because look at how mad the United States was. Hillary Clinton went on the offensive. Remember in the election, I think it was December of 2011, where she was encouraging people to rise up in the streets to disrupt the election, to overthrow Putin. The United States was just furious about it. And what did this lead to? This led to Maidan. You say, well, that's Ukraine. Ukraine has always been the keystone to the American concept of destabilizing Russia. Ukraine has been the keystone. And you know what? You reap the wind, or you sow the wind, you reap the whirlwind. And we're reaping the whirlwind right now because Russia didn't take the bait. They reversed the bait. I mean, everything Russia is doing right now is a clear indication, at least from my assessment, that they have recognized this trap for years. And they have built the game, positioned themselves so that it's not them who have been sucked into a trap. It is NATO who sucked into a trap. You want to know the proof? Look at NATO's panic meeting today. Panic meeting. They talk about NATO unity. There is no NATO unity. NATO is a scared organization right now that doesn't know what to do. And then Russia just umped the ante, because this isn't just about the military. There's this whole economic aspect to it. Remember how Joe Biden bragged about staring Putin in the eyes. Remember the hardened killer that he was? And he said, if you invade Ukraine, we will impose the world's greatest stringent massive economic program. And he sort of hinted at what they're going to do. We're going to cut you off from SWIFT. We're going to seize your assets. We're going to do all this. And Putin went, all right, thanks. Then Putin went back to Moscow and said, all right, we got their game plan. What do we do? And they built a game plan. And they just played a big card today. Did you see what Putin did?
He's declaring that the EU will have to buy gas and oil in rubles.
In rubles.
And that is just massive. It's like you will freeze if you don't buy it in rubles. And also,
you'll starve to death. Everything you think you enjoy in life, this wonderful Western lifestyle that you have, is gone. Goodbye, do svidaniya. Because once again, the Americans lied to Europe. Remember, Biden telling everybody, we got a plan, guys. We got a plan. Don't worry about gas. We'll get you all the gas you need. Don't worry about oil. We'll get you all the oil you need. And then when the time came, the Americans went, yeah, no, I'm sorry, we don't have a plan. There isn't any oil. There isn't any gas. America's running around right now, Operation Tin Cup, going on their knees to Venezuela. I mean, to Venezuela, to Nicolas Maduro, who we tried several times to overthrow with a coup, and then we embarrassingly appoint Juan Guaido as president. We then send James Story, the poor ambassador that's in the middle of this, crawling on his knees saying, we need your oil.
Yeah.
Maduro's considering right now, but he's not playing this game. Iran. This Iran nuclear deal was dead in the water. We weren't going anywhere with this. You know, sunset clauses, malign activity, ballistic missiles, all
worst
these
terrorists in the world.
You are the worst people in the world, the scum of the earth. We're never oil. Yeah, boys, let's lock this deal down. We're in. Yeah. We're in, all in. You blew up a Saudi Arabia Aramco facility. Shame on you, but we're still in.
Oh, you and they're now saying they'll remove the IRGC from the State Department terror list. Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, they're not terrorists anymore. Don't worry about it. We're all in because we need your oil. We don't have a plan B. Algeria, gas. Nope, they ain't selling gas. Nobody's selling gas. And if they do sell gas, it's not going to be enough. Germany right now, I won't use the terms that I wanted to use, but they're doing something to a brick. Okay? It's they're defecating a brick because they...
Okay, that's part one. And you're hearing the same person that Madeleine Albright went out of her way to try to destroy, Scott Ritter, because he went into Iraq, he and his inspection team that he headed from the UN, and they looked at everything. There were no weapons of mass destruction. And that was the message he gave to the administration. But the administration didn't want that message. They wanted war. They wanted Iraq's oil, and they got it. American companies did. So they went after him. Nothing they could do could dissuade him from telling the truth. So he's back telling the truth now. He was in all these meetings. As you'll hear from other parts, he'll show you who's corrupt within our government agency, how they lie as a matter of record. Anyhow, that's we're going to say goodbye to our WBA audience. But before we do, let's just one shout out to the people listening now around the world. Please help support WBAI. Become a buddy. And it's not difficult. It's not expensive. It's just on a monthly basis. You would be able to help the station and by being a buddy. It's just that simple. Now, I've given you the number many times. Let me give it to you again. Call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. And say you want to become a buddy. It'll help. We're going to continue on the top of the hour, going to prn.live. And remember, if we don't get our system fixed today as far as pre-records, go to the archives. Any pre-recorded show that would normally be on today will be on the archives. You still won't miss the show. You just have to go to the archives. And the archive number is 631-359-9463. 631-359-9463. Now, you've been listening to different points of view. And by the way, you can also see videos where they've hired PR firms to spin just one side of the story. For example, I watched two separate videos of dead Ukrainians. The trouble is, in both separate videos, one they were all out on a table, the other they were in a truck, they weren't dead. One guy popped out, and then someone over and stuck his head back in, like, not now, not now, we're still filming. Another guy, before they started to film, you can see a guy in a body bag with his head out smoking a cigarette. And then, evidently, he thought as long as he lay down, you wouldn't see his head smoking a cigarette during the whole comment. So this is the fog of war. All war is bad. Innocents are the ones who ultimately are punished. Infrastructure is hell. But I don't like being played. I don't being lied to. I like to look at all the facts. I like to look at the context. And I most importantly like to see how we can end these conflicts so those who are innocent don't suffer and those who are responsible are held accountable. So that's what you're going to hear a little bit more of this week. By the way, tomorrow evening on the Progressive Commentary at 7 o'clock, we invited her back because she was so riveting and so spot on. And you'll be able to hear Dr. Jessica Rose tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock going over material we did not have a chance to discuss in her new findings, brand new, on death. She told me today, and they're staggering how high it is. So anyhow, that's tomorrow. If you'd like to call in and share your points of view, you have 2 minutes. Call 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I've been working all night on a particular project that I'm looking forward to wrapping up this week so we can present it. When I get into my work mode, I just work right through the day and night. And I'm talking on the phone. My voice is just a little hoarse because of that. So, Rodney, do we have anyone on the phone? If we do, we will take a few calls. If not, then we will wrap this up. No calls? Okay. Well, we only have a minute to go, so we'll wrap it up. And thank you all for listening. And, and by the way, I got a call this morning from Luann, and Luann said that we are filled for the health retreat, but we have one person that cannot make it to the anti-aging study. And this is going to be one of the most important, if not the most single important anti-aging clinical study that I'm ever aware of. And I've done the previous four. This will be the fifth. We're adding brand new stuff in. It'll be a wonderful experience for people. And at least with this experience, based upon new technology that we're being allowed to use from a university and a foundation, you'll be able to know your biological age. And we're also testing for DNA methylation. So this is very exciting. The diet, the exercise, the stress management, the green time, and so a whole lot is going to help you change your life. Give a call to Luann if you're interested, 903-881-7008, 903-881-7008. Have a nice day, everyone.